I believed, I want to just say that I didn't introduce at the top. I want to mention we're going to be talking to Tony Leah, who we often do speak to because we want to keep up with labor matters. I'll come back later to this question of war and peace why we should be alert now, very alert, given what has happened with Somalia today, Somaliland, as it's called. It's part of Somalia, and Israel has recognized it, and there'll be trouble. But we want to talk to Tony Leah, who is the author of The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike, because we're going to update ourselves on some dramatic, stories that need to be shared by listeners of CIUT, but everybody should hear about these things. And they can only hear about it actually on CIUT, which is we're very proud of. Tony Leah, are you there?
I am, Phil. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound fine. And again, congratulations on your book. It came out this year, right? The Truth About the 37 Oshawa GM Strike?
Actually, just about a year ago.
One year ago. I've just been talking about China, and we know that, and I know you've taken an interest in it, and auto workers everywhere in the world are interested in the subject development of electrical vehicles, which is one of the big stories for people who work in auto in Europe and North America, because now Trump and Carney seem to agree that we're going to stick with gas, and there's all kinds of financial damage has been done because they were going down one road, and now they've turned around and decided to go cross-country back to gasoline, I guess. But members of your union, of course, have looked at, followed this development, and they want to remain employed as auto workers. And I understand that some members of Unifor who work as journalists have visited China and made a report. Could you talk about that and who they are and why they went to China, et cetera?
Yes, I think it's quite an interesting story. There's a component of Unifor called the Canadian Freelance Union. So it functions like a local of Unifor. People sign up for it if they're in communications or journalism, working as freelancers. They have hundreds of members across the country, and they send delegates to conventions and so on. So they function as Unifor members. And they were part, some of their members were part of a delegation of five independent journalists that recently visited China and were able to tour a number of places. And they had a webinar on December 4th where some of them talked about their experiences. And the video of that is available on the Canadian Freelance Union YouTube channel, if anybody wants to check it out. And I found it very engaging and interesting.
More precisely, where would you go? What would you do? You'd write YouTube?
If you're on YouTube, just search for Canadian Freelance Union.
Okay. Canadian Freelance Union.
Channel.
Okay.
Yeah. So a couple of the journalists who were there were Owen Schalk, who writes for Canadian Dimension, and Mariam Razak, who writes for the Daily Scrum News. And they visited on their tour Xinjiang, Beijing. They toured a factory run by Xiaomi, one of the major electric vehicle manufacturers in China. In Beijing, they went on a self-driving bus, and they showed some pictures of that. You call the bus on your phone, on WeChat, which is the Chinese all-purpose social media app, and a ride costs 4 yuan, which is about 78 cents, and there's no steering wheel or pedals. You just get on and take your ride and get off. It's quite amazing. They were very impressed with the tour of the Xiaomi factory and the high level of technology in the vehicles that are being manufactured for a very reasonable price. And they toured mainly Uyghur autonomous region of Xinjiang. They went to Urumqi, the Grand Bazaar. They visited the Islamic Institute. And they had lots of interesting things to say about the tour. And I think one of the main points that they made is that if you want to know what's going on, and there's lots of negative media about China, but you should go and see for yourself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, that's
what an original what idea.
Particularly what independent journalists should do.
Now, they're a local, or they're members of, they are members of Unifor, but they are, and it's a freelance group. It's,
yes,
all of them are freelancers.
They're all
some write for Dimension. One has written for Dimension, or does?
Yes.
By the way, has Dimension itself covered this? Do you know?
Not that I'm aware of.
So isn't that curious? You know, it's so wonderful an idea. People to people, they used to say.
Yes. Well,
we have politicians who are authorities on China. They're so authoritative that they actually, I think the entire parliament accused China of genocide in its Xinjiang, right?
Yes.
None of them have been there. They could go there if they would get it, you know, purchase a ticket, and go and have a look before they run their mouths, you might say. There should be a project, shouldn't there, where these journalists visit parliamentarians and say, can I tell you what I saw?
Absolutely, yes. In particular, you know, because of the really inflammatory accusations that have been made about the treatment of Muslims in Xinjiang, Maryam Razak, who was on the tour, said that as a Muslim herself, she was particularly interested in seeing how the Muslim population lives in that province and was really pleasantly surprised to see the level of support and respect for all ethnic groups, including Uyghurs, and halal food and mosques everywhere, cultural accommodations, and you know, that she said in the webinar, there's a lot of negative perception of that province within the media, so I encourage people to actually go out there and see for themselves.
Yes.
The technological advancements, artificial intelligence, the way that culture is integrated within modernization, and the huge sense of security within that province.
And I suppose the only answer to her from popular culture here is that people are actually afraid to exercise their right to see for themselves. They're afraid because they think this will just get me in trouble, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this is the time to be talking about it, because I don't know if you heard the head of the show, but there's a lot of nasty and illegal business going on in the region, where Japan, who has under the UN, under the aegis of the victorious United Nations, remember the United Nations came into being during and at the end of the war, and they signed the terms saying they would never remilitarize. But now they're talking about, oh, we're going to remilitarize, all right. And Canada says nothing. This might be the time to light candles or turn on the lights so that before it gets even darker. Here, our cultural political leaders are adamant that what you just said, or they said in their report, can't be true. It's not permitted to be true, as a matter of fact. Now, following on that, and we're talking about Canada-Chinese relations, the road to peace as opposed to the road to war. you have a local in Unifor on the East Coast that has called for relations or for a different attitude on tariffs from the union and from the Canadian government. Can you talk about that? Tell me what it is.
So this group, which also functions like a local of Unifor, although it's a larger, more diverse group, and at one point was an independent union that had broken away from, I believe, the United Food and Commercial Workers, but it's called the Fish, Food, and Allied Workers, FFAW, and it's a component of Unifor. In fact, Lana Payne, before she became a national officer of Unifor, worked for the FFAW in Newfoundland for many years. Mm-hmm. And in October, they wrote, published a letter that the FFAW sent to Lana Payne. This is the first line of the letter. On behalf of FFAW Unifor, I'm writing to express our profound disappointment with Unifor National's support for the federal government's 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles. And they explain that they're concerned because of the extreme negative impact on their members. And they say Unifor's recent statement defending these tariffs ignores this reality, which is the counter tariffs on Canadian seafood and its impact on workers who are members of FFAW. It's unacceptable for Canada's largest private sector union to support a policy that deliberately sacrifices one group of workers to shield another. And they call on Unifor to stop supporting the 100% tariff. And, you know, it's not a statement that is widely known, I don't think, by Unifor members.
I don't think anybody knows if they weren't listening to CIUT, frankly. Well, I guess they do, by the way, in their own region, their own area. This must be a big topic. And what basic community would it be?
They have members across Newfoundland, mm-hmm. every corner of
Newfoundland.
And Labrador as well, I believe.
Would you know, I shouldn't ask you a question out of the blue, haven't talked, but what the numbers, how many fishermen there'd be in that group?
I don't know. They represent inshore fishers, including a component of people that operate their own boats. They represent workers in processing plants. And at one time, they had 20,000 members. I don't know what their current membership.
So in Newfoundland, this is a significant union force and presence.
Yes, it is.
And broadly from that, I would assume that the community supports them with this position because, like auto workers in Ontario, I mean, the communities are definitely behind them on trying to maintain jobs and punish auto companies that are running away and battery companies that are trying to bury the batteries. And so it is, it's not just a union matter or economic, but it's also what is a correct posture of trade regarding China. And there was a response from the union, right?
There was a response.
They noticed, by the way, they definitely were following what the fishermen in Newfoundland think, and they apparently are correcting them, right?
The open letter was published on October the 8th, and they got a reply from Lana Payne on October the 9th. So, yes, I think that people were paying attention. Unfortunately, the response from Lana, it's 2.5 pages, and she kind of ties herself in knots in trying to say that they care about and support the members of the FFAW who are being impacted, but not wanting to back down from their policy of supporting 100% tariff on Chinese electric vehicles. And we can remember that it was the Biden government that first introduced that 100% tariff and
yes.
looked to Canada to copy it. And as they have done in recent years, the Liberal government was quickly obedient. There was no indication that there was any immediate threat to Canadian Canadians or Canadian workers from Chinese electric vehicles, but they implemented this same, I would say, illegal 100% tariff, certainly a violation of international trade rules,
mm-hmm.
and must have understood that there would be a response. And the problem with Lana's statement is she creates a false equivalence. She talks about damage being done to Canada because of Trump's tariffs, and she says that China is also attacking Canada. But that ignores the stubborn fact, that China did not initiate an attack on Canada. China is responding to this incredible 100% tariff, which is very different from what's happening with the U.S. government. Trump was not responding to any attacks from Canada. Mm-hmm. He was just trying to use his muscle to get things that he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that that's helpful. and in fact, Unifor's statement doesn't really lay out any way to correct these problems, because it doesn't allow the possibility of re-examining whether that 100% tariff made sense in the first place or not.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a very important story, and it's striking, of course, that it occurred in October and hasn't broken the surface of discussion in major media or any of the political parties that I'm aware of. Yet clearly, and you just underlined it, here we are with, Carney has been suggesting, and certainly some opinions and editorialists have backed the idea that he needs to get into a good relationship or working relationship. And China, by the way, I follow the media. They are very much open to it and encourage the idea. Let's have a proper trade relations. But if they sit down together, as they do, the first thing that has to be on the agenda, I assume, for the Chinese is, how can we go forward if you're going to put 100% tariffs on our automobiles?
Yes.
And, thank goodness the Newfoundland fishermen understand the same thing. And then when you come to that, it's Biden and Trump who both agree that on this really reactionary, punitive idea about how to operate as in international trade, which is bullying. It did start with Biden and so it's very important. By the way, I hope there'll be more developments in this. I mean, mm-hmm. I doubt, you tell me what your expectations are. I can't see how the Newfoundland fishermen would change their minds about this.
No, and I don't know any follow-up information. I certainly will be looking to see if I can find out more. But I think that you're right. The situation hasn't changed, and declarations of solidarity while maintaining the policy that has caused the problem is certainly not going to satisfy people, because it's not going to correct anything. Lana went so far in her letter as to say that if seafood tariffs were not imposed on Atlantic Canada by China because of the federal electric vehicle policy, that China would have done them anyway. They would have found some other excuse to do it. It's a ridiculous statement, really. Of course they would not have. They had no reason to. They've never you know, acted in that way.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for that. And again, it's only CIET. Anybody's going to find this out. It's almost like, you know, some mass media seems to be able to know when to be silent on subjects. They're like lemmings. There's been a development. The Detroit Free Press is reporting that the administration of Sean Fain, who has been dramatically present in the discussion of unions and the labor movement and what their posture should be. The UAW has really set some great examples about in democratizing their union and also taking initiating new strike strategies, which prevailed in the fight with the big, so it used to be called the Big Three, but there, according to Detroit Free Press, there's trouble in the administration or around the administration. Sean Fain, who the last time I saw him, he was at the Democratic convention calling Trump a scab, and then about 2 months later, he was agreeing with Donald Trump on the trade.
On tariffs,
which I always, you know, that gave me whiplash, I guess you call it, trying to follow. But what is this problem that he has now, or the union is getting into, UAW?
Well, to give a little bit of background, and by the way, it's not just the Detroit media that have covered this story, but national media in the United States has been covering it. The UAW has been under the control of an appointed monitor as a resolution to the corruption scandal from the previous administration. And people will remember that there were about 13 high-ranking UAW officials, including two former presidents, who were indicted, convicted, and served jail terms for corruption. It was personal enrichment combined with collaboration with the auto corporations to impose inferior contracts on their members.
That's heavy business.
That was the subject of all of that. The resolution involved a number of things, including an agreement. There was a consent decree. The union agreed to put to the members in a referendum the question of whether or not they wanted to change the way that their top leaders were elected and move to a system of every member having a vote. And that referendum did happen, and it was passed by about two-thirds of the members. And since then, there has been the first election where every member had a vote and brought in this new team led by President Sean Fain that pledged to get rid of corruption, to get rid of concessions, and to have more democracy within the union, and did lead a major, I would say, groundbreaking strike against the auto companies a couple of years ago. So some very positive stuff. Also won a vote to unionize the Volkswagen plant in Tennessee. But are still under, as part of the consent decree, the UAW is still under the control of a federally appointed monitor. And the monitor produces regular reports and identified problems within the leadership of the UAW over the last few reports. I think that it's disappointing is not really a strong enough word, but the revelations that have come out are that internally, at least, Sean Fain and his team has been acting in a punitive manner against officials that he feels are not agreeing with him. Mm-hmm. And in the most recent report, it was revealed that he had been involved with a couple of his top aides in concocting charges against the number two official of the UAW, the Secretary Treasurer, Margaret Mock. They concocted charges against her that were not true in order to take action against her.
The word is concocted. So
yes.
And pretty serious.
Yes, and it is somewhat remarkable to me that knowing that the monitor was watching what was going on and had powers over them for at least a couple of years, that they did things that were clearly undemocratic. And I'm not making a judgment about who was in the right or in the wrong about any of their political differences about how the union should be run, but they didn't have an open debate where they said, you know, we think these people are taking the wrong position. Here's what it's about, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't involve the members in it. They worked with the person who had been appointed as the compliance officer. In other words, the person, this was also part of the consent decree, that there would be somebody that would monitor ethical behavior within the union. That person collaborated with Sean Fain and a couple of his top aides to produce a report that accused Margaret Mock of false charges. And that was used then to remove...
So the watchdog bidder...
Yes.
The one whose job was to protect the integrity of the process, engaged in doing harming her.
And the monitor was able to recover a whole bunch of deleted text messages between all of these parties, messages that had been deleted from Sean Fain's phone, for example. And he told the monitor he couldn't explain how they got deleted, but... they were recovered. And among other very distasteful things, the monitor showed that the two aides, whose names are Chris Brooks and Jonah Furman, and they both were former people from Labor Notes, journalists from Labor Notes.
Labor Notes had a rather distinguished reputation, progressives, bringing the word to the members and helping.
A very long history.
Grassroots.
Yeah.
Good old grassroots. Ground up. Rank and file.
Yes, rank and file. You know,
I love that.
Played a remarkable good role in, among other things, supporting reformers within the UAW who were fighting for one member, one vote. But Brooks and Furman, it was revealed, had... rewritten the compliance officer's report with her, and she cooperated in having this done. And then she presented the report at the International Executive Board meeting. And they also wrote the text of the motion that they wanted somebody to make after the report was given, and gave that motion to a person, and Sean Fain sent it to her with directions about how to introduce the motion and when to introduce the motion, with because he didn't want to make the motion against a black woman officer. He wanted another black woman to make the motion.
They went to that extent to...
Yes.
Play,
that's all revealed in
to
the
play some identity politics in order to put over something that was disreputable.
Yes. Very, very
ugly,
very
story.
The end result was that after 6 months of resisting and delaying, the UAW has finally, they got rid of the compliance officer, Chris Brooks, who was Sean Fain's chief of staff, resigned, and Jonah Furman was demoted and given a 2-week unpaid suspension. And they have, you know, restored to Margaret Mock and to another officer who had assignments taken away from them. They had those assignments restored to them.
Wow.
So that's the result. Sean Fain issued a statement in which he announced what he was doing, but did not mention the monitor or the monitor's report, and did not mention the names of Chris Brooks and Jonah Furman.
Oh.
That's the only response that there's been from the UAW that I'm aware of.
By the way, you have people can read some of this. Are you talking about it on the Solidarnet?
I haven't written about Solidarnet. UAW Monitor has a website. People want to read the monitor's report, and I'm not a fan of the process of the U.S. federal government controlling unions, and I'm not a fan of that particular monitor. We know that he played a particularly nasty role when the UAW issued a public statement calling for a ceasefire and arms embargo on Israel. He actually tried to interfere in that.
Yes.
It was very nasty stuff.
Not his job.
Not his job at all. And, probably he should have been removed for doing that, but he wasn't. And the problem is that while that monitorship exists, that's the rules under which the UAW has to operate and try and get their way through. And I don't think that the way that they were conducting themselves was particularly helpful with that. They should remember the prior history of the labor movement and a very progressive leader of the Teamsters Union, Ron Carey, who was elected similarly by one member, one vote, when that was brought about because of federal control to get rid of corruption from the Teamsters. And a few years later, the federal agency that was monitoring the union leveled accusations against Ron Carey and actually removed him from office, removed him as president of the Teamsters. Not only that, banned him from being a member of the Teamsters for life.
Yeah. What a nasty story. People can read what you're following this. Where do they go to do that?
Just Google UAW Monitor.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm talking about your... My
stuff. I haven't written about this yet.
We anticipate you will. Let's make it up.
my blog is at solinet.ca.
Solinet.ca. Well, given what all the analysis you've provided, I think everybody'd love to see your further comments on this. Tony Leah, thank you very much for joining us. It's been very informative. Thank you.
Thanks,
Phil. Okay. What I get from that, this is the Tato Report, CIT 89.5 FM in Toronto. What I get from that is, there's an old saying, your fellow workers are not the class enemy. There used to be arguments, and I remember a guy, Harrington, is a socialist in the U.S., not the best, but Michael Harrington, he wrote a great book about the other America, the ones who were poor. At any rate, he was in an argument with somebody about a third person, and he said, listen, say what you will, so-and-so is not the class enemy. But these individuals, Tony just described, these are people treating each other as if they were the class enemy, which means, you can use any means against them. Not a good idea.